Okay. We come now to number four, the fourth beatitude. Where are we at on our reading? Who did my last reading? Ethan's turn. Read me chapter 5, verse 6.
Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled.
Now, the Jews and the dispensationalists, they said, when the kingdom comes, it's a time of feasting, a time of joy, feasting and plenty. And Jesus said, when the kingdom comes, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Righteousness, you know, I used to think, blessed are those who want to study and read and learn all they can from the Bible, and that's good. We do need to hunger and thirst. But this word righteousness means justification. They're hungering and they're thirsting to be justified from their sins. See, so they are poor in spirit. They realize they're bankrupt. They're mourning. And they humbly are wanting to obey the Lord, and then they want to be righteous or justified. And if you're hungering and you're thirsting to be justified, it means that you want it so badly. You're willing to do anything that you can to have. You know, remember Nathan told last night about a man that was converted to the church. He was baptized. And he thought, I'm going to fast for 40 days and 40 nights. And I'm just going to see if you can do that. And he went 14 days or 11 days. He made it. I think the number you used last night was 14. I don't know. But anyway, he says on day 14, he said, all you can think about is just food. All other desires in life, you're not even thinking about those. You're thinking about food. And that's all you want. And we really don't know what it is to be hungry in America. I don't think any of us here in this room really knows what hunger is. Okay? But in the Bible, there was an occasion where Syria was, they had surrounded the city of Samaria. They were going to starve them out. And it got a real bad famine. They had eaten up all of the food inside of the city. And people were starting to starve. So here's a little story right here. Let's look at this and read it. 2 Kings 6, verses 26 through 29. Cody, read that. 2 Kings 6, 26 through 29.
And as the king of Israel was passing by upon the wall, there cried a woman unto him, saying, help, my lord, O king. And he said, if the Lord do not help thee, whence shall I help thee? Out of the barn floor, or out of the winepress? And the king said unto her, what aileth thee? And she answered, this woman said unto me, give thy son, that we may eat him today, and we will eat my son tomorrow. So we boiled my son and did eat him. And I said unto her on the next day, give thy son, that we may eat him, and she hath hid her son. And it came to pass when
the king... That's good. Now there's just some hunger right there. They boiled and ate the first kid the first day. Now the next day, it's time to boil kid number two and eat him. And that mama hid her son. Somebody says, oh, she loved her son and she didn't want to see him die. Maybe she wanted to eat him all by herself. And she wasn't going to share this meal. And I'll tell you, we've never seen hunger like that. But I'll tell you what, if you get to the point where you are hungering and you are thirsting to be justified with God like that, you'd do anything. You'd do anything. And if God told you to get baptized, you'd get baptized. If he told you to go to church every Sunday, why, you'd do that if that's what he told you. If he told you to drink out of one cup after everybody else, you'd do that if you wanted to be justified bad enough. Problem is, people aren't so hungry and they aren't so thirsty to be justified. That's our problem. Let's go on. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 7. Okay, Evan, read that.
Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy.
Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Now the Jews and the dispensationalists, they believe that when the kingdom come, that would be the time that the Jews would finally take revenge on those Gentiles, the Romans. And Jesus said, blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the merciful. Now, what's mercy? What's mercy? We got two words, mercy and grace. What's the difference between mercy and grace? Anybody? Ethan?
Mercy is not giving you what you deserve, and grace is giving you what you deserve.
Okay, this is a negative term, and this is a positive term. Mercy means I am not going to give you what you deserve. And grace is positive. It means I am going to give you what you don't deserve. Kind of two sides of the same coin. Okay? So being merciful, that doesn't mean overlooking sin. You know, to many people, being merciful means that we watch sin happen right in front of our eyes, and we just, I'm not saying a word about it. Go ahead. Just do it. And, you know, he's a kind of, a merciful fella is someone who watches blatant sin and just pats everybody on the back and says, we're all sinners. We're all sinners. I'm not going to say nothing to you about anything you're doing because we're all sinners. Let me tell you, if we think of mercy like that, then we're destroying what the word means. Now, God, there is nobody. You can't outdo God on mercy. You can't outdo Him. But God does not overlook sin. In Luke chapter 6, Justin, it's your turn. Luke 6:36.
Therefore, be merciful, just as your Father also is merciful.
Be merciful as your Father. Does God just overlook sin? Oh, he doesn't overlook sin. He's merciful, but he doesn't just overlook sin. So, how does God show mercy? Well, let's see. Let's go over to Exodus chapter 20. We're going to be merciful like God. Well, let's see how does God show mercy? Exodus 20 and verse 6. Jacob?
But showing mercy to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments.
Mercy to those who love him and keep his commandments. Proverbs 28. Josiah, Proverbs 28:13. He who confesses and forsakes his sins, those will have mercy. You see? So God doesn't show mercy to people who blatantly break his law and continue to keep on doing it, have no intentions of stopping. He doesn't show mercy to them in the end. He may show mercy in the fact that he lets them keep living and gives them time to repent. But he doesn't forgive them. He doesn't overlook it. Okay? And his patience runs out. And he saves only those who confess and forsake their sins. So, one day, our patience will run out as well, but we're going to be merciful like God, and as long as God's allowing them to keep on living, we're going to let them keep. We're not going to go on a crusade and start killing folks. But the ones that receive mercy from God are those who obey and confess and forsake their sins. They shall have mercy. They're the ones that are going to make it into the eternal phase of the kingdom. James chapter 2, verse 13. Nathan?
For judgment is without mercy to one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment.
Okay. We've got to show mercy to people. When others sin and they decide to forsake, they confess and forsake their sin, we've got to show them the mercy that we want God to show us. Okay, that's part of being a disciple if you want to go to heaven. You've got to be poor in spirit, got to mourn over that, got to be humble to the point that you'll do anything because you're hungering and thirsting to be righteous, and then you start showing mercy to those others who have also sinned and are looking for forgiveness from you. Okay? Now, let's look at verse 8. Matthew 5, verse 8. Nehemiah?
Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God.
Pure in heart. Now, the Jews and dispensationalists, they thought when the kingdom comes, that means blessed is the Jew, the 100% pure bloodline of Abraham. Blessed are the pure bloodline. Jesus said, blessed are the pure in heart. The pure in heart. And I think Jesus is emphasizing here the spiritual nature of the kingdom. Now, the pure in heart are those whose minds and motives are pure. They don't have any ulterior motives in getting baptized. No ulterior motives in coming to church. They're coming to, because they want to please God. No ulterior motives. And the pure in heart are those who receive forgiveness. Now, this doesn't tell you how to become pure in heart. It doesn't tell you how that's done. It just says those that are pure are approved by God. How do you get your heart pure so that you can be approved by God? Well, this passage doesn't tell us, but it's not the whole Bible. So we're going to go to other verses and we're going to see how do you get your heart pure. Acts 15, verse 9. Joseph?
And made no distinction between us and them, purifying their hearts by faith.
Their hearts were purified by faith. A faith that trusts in God so much it's willing to do anything that God said to get right. An obedient faith. Okay. 1 Peter 1:22. Ethan? First Peter 1:22.
Oh. Spirit, sincere love of the brethren, love one another fervently with a pure heart.
You purified your souls how? In obeying the truth. Their hearts are made pure by faith, and that faith is a faith that obeys, an obedient faith. And the Bible says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Now, what does that mean? John chapter 1, verse 18 says, no man has seen God at any time. And in Exodus 33 and verse 20, God said, no man shall see my face and live. And yet, Jesus said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Now, let's look at another passage about seeing God. Seeing God. Cody, 1 John 3, verse 6.
abideth in him sinneth not. Whosoever sinneth hath not seen him, neither knoweth him.
Now, this is actually continuous action here. The verb is a present tense verb. And literally what this is saying is, whoever abideth in him doth not keep on sinning. If you abide in Christ, you do not keep on sinning. But whoever keeps on sinning has never seen God. That kind of implies if you stop sinning, you do see God. How do you see God? When Jesus said, no man has ever seen God, and you can't see God's face and live. But here it says, whoever keeps on sinning has never seen him or known him. Let's look at another one. In 3 John, verse 11. Evan? 3 John 11.
Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good. He that doeth good is of God, but he that doeth evil hath not seen God.
The one who keeps on doing evil has not seen God. So, what's it mean? If you do not keep on sinning, you can see God. And blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. What's that mean? All right. Sometimes when I was in school, a teacher would send us home with homework, algebra homework. You go home, you work all night long on this algebra, and you can't get the answer. The one problem is just killing you. And finally, you go back the next day, and the teacher says, oh, let me show you how to work this problem, you know. And so she starts writing on the board, you know. And she shows you how to work it. And she finally, breaks it down real simple. And you finally she shows you how you do it. And you say, oh, now I see. Now I see. What do I mean, now I see? Now I understand. Now I understand. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. They shall understand God. They shall understand Him. And so someone who is pure in heart, they have no ulterior motives. They're not thinking about themselves. You know, people that go to church say, I'm not going there anymore. I'm not going to listen to Nathan preach because I don't get anything out of it. Well, it sounds like they're kind of going for them, what they can get out of it. I thought worship was us coming and God was the center of the worship, not Nathan or anybody else. God-centered worship. He's the center. And so those who are pure in heart, they got no ulterior motives, those are the ones that understand God. And you don't hear people that are pure in heart saying, if there was a God, why did He let my little baby die? If there is a God, why does He let there be wars? If there is a God, why does He let suffering and injustice go on in the world? Those people that ask those kind of questions, you start asking, are they pure in heart? Blessed are the pure in heart. Approved by God are the pure in heart, for they shall see Him, they shall understand Him. Okay. Now let's read Matthew 5 and verse 9. Matthew 5, verse 9. Whose turn? Is it Justin's turn.
Blessed are the peacemakers,
for they shall be called sons of God.
Blessed are the peacemakers. Peacemakers. What's funny? Oh. All right. The Jewish nation and the dispensationalists, they thought to themselves, when the kingdom comes, it'll be a time of worldwide peace because we're going to conquer all of them and we're going to reign over everybody with an ironclad fist. Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers. They'll be called the sons of God. A peacemaker is only needed when there's fighting going on. You ever thought about that? So when the kingdom arrives, there's going to be fighting and feuding. And so you need a peacemaker. Those will be the ones that will be citizens of the kingdom. And it's not going to be a time of worldwide peace where there is no turmoil going on. Because you don't need peacemakers during worldwide peace. You need peacemakers when there's war going on. Okay? Now, John 18:36. Jacob? John 18:36.
Answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here.
Okay. The Lord's kingdom is not of the world. And that's what the Jews, and that's what the dispensationalists need to understand. And some of these terms help us to see that the kingdom is a spiritual kingdom. And it's not of this world. Now there's two kinds of peacemakers. Let me make some room here. There is a peacemaker and there is a peacemaker. And there are some people, wherever they go, the congregation has peace. Because they have shattered the congregation. They have torn it to shreds. And everybody's going different ways. And it's like an atomic bomb blew up right there. And they're peacemakers. But Jesus said the ones that are blessed by God, the ones that are approved by God, the ones that will be called sons of God, are the ones who bring peace among those fighting and warring. Now, to be peacemakers, the kind of peacemaker the Lord wants us to be this kind of a peacemaker. Okay, I've got a number one change. I got to have a new view of myself. A new view of myself. Because if I'm thinking only about me, and you're thinking only about you, what's good for you and your family, and I'm thinking just about what's good for me and my family, we're going to have a business meeting and we're going to make some decisions, and I'm over here thinking I want what's best for me and my family, and you're thinking the same way, we're not going to have peace. We're going to have the wrong kind of peace. Got to have a different kind of attitude about ourselves. 1 Corinthians 10:24. Josiah? 1 Corinthians 10:24.
Let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth.
Oh, now there's how you're going to have peace. Don't insist on your rights. Okay? Don't just think about your own self and what's good for you and your family. Number two, got to start viewing things in light of the gospel. And instead of asking, how's this decision going to affect me and my family, we've got to start asking, how is my actions and my decision going to affect the church? How's it going to affect the cause? How's it going to affect outsiders? How's it going to affect babes in Christ? I'd start asking those kind of questions. Philippians 2. Joseph. Philippians 2 and verse 4. Is it your turn? Oh, Nehemiah. Nathan.
Philippians 2, 4.
Let each of you look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interest of others.
There. Think about how it affects others. They shall be called the children of God. These are the ones that are approved of God. Blessed. God approved. Blessed are those who are peacemakers. And finally, the persecuted. Okay? Matthew chapter 5, verses 10 through 12. Nehemiah?
Those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you.
Now, think about what this is saying. Think about what this is saying. This is saying that when a disciple is persecuted for the sake of Jesus, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Being a disciple persecuted for Jesus' sake is equivalent to a prophet who was persecuted for God's sake. And the only way that that can be true is if Jesus is God. That's the only way that can be possible. And so this is telling us a little bit about the nature of Jesus. And the Jewish nation and dispensationalists, they think that persecution will cease when the Messiah comes and when He sets up His kingdom and there won't be any more persecution for God's people. And Jesus said, that's just when the persecution starts up, gets going good. Blessed are those who are persecuted for my sake. Now, Jesus is not saying that everyone who suffers is blessed. He's not saying everyone who goes through suffering is approved by God. There has to be some characteristics to the suffering. It has to be undeserved. You see, if you violate a law and you suffer because of it, you deserve that. There's no approval there, no blessing there. 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 15 and 16 says, if you suffer because of your own sins and your own lawlessness, there's no blessing. You deserve it. So it has to be undeserved. Number two, it must be for righteousness' sake. Number three, it must be viewed as a blessing. You know, our attitude plays a major role in whether we receive a blessing or not when we're persecuted. And so we either get discouraged and we give up. Oh, woe is me. Or we become more determined and more devout and we dig in deeper and we are going to stay faithful. So people today are searching for all kinds. People today are searching for approval. People want to be approved. Nobody likes being the oddball out. And so we want, and you know, peer pressure makes young people do all kind of weird things to get approval. And that peer pressure, it makes us start getting earrings and nose rings and other kind of rings that I won't mention. And baggy pants. And all of this kind of weird stuff. Because we want approval. We want to be approved. But we need to be seeking God's approval. And Jesus is showing us how to be approved by God, how to be blessed. And Jesus is here giving us the essential characteristics that we need to be in the kingdom. Well, I forgot to put persecuted here. And the Bible is teaching us over in the book of Peter, in one of Peter's epistles, you see, he says, those who have suffered in the flesh have ceased from sin. When someone, you know, sometimes we baptize our girlfriends or we baptize our spouse, and you wonder, are they really converted? Did they do this because they really wanted to serve the Lord? Where is that? Is it 1 Peter chapter 2? Chapter 4, that's right. Let's go over there. Yeah, Ethan, read that for us. 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 1.
Therefore, since Christ suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same mind, for he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin.
How do I know if someone has truly obeyed God and truly given up on their life of sin? If they're willing to suffer for the cause of Christ, you know that they have ceased from sin. You know they have turned their back on their old life. Because I'll tell you something, if you got baptized just for your girlfriend or just for your husband, if that's the only reason that you got baptized, and I'll tell you something, when the suffering starts, you're not going to keep up and stay faithful. But he who suffers in the flesh, that's the mark of somebody who has truly given up on their life of sin. He who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. Might ought to highlight that verse. I didn't have it highlighted. That's why I wasn't able to find it so easy. That's a good verse. All right. That'll end our little study. Let's have another break and try to wake up again, and we'll have one more session. Okay.
This is out of Carson. I remember this when I was reading through it. It's about the Beatitudes. He said, diligent readers often cherish writers and speakers who can capture a complex position in a single polished gem of a statement. Such aphorisms, as they're called, are especially telling when they first become public. Unfortunately, once an aphorism has been widely disseminated, it is in danger of being domesticated, a trained poodle that is dragged out when circumstances require it. For many Christians, that is what's become of the Beatitudes, literally the blessings, a name derived from the word, from the first word of each verse. We are so familiar with them that the words can glide piously off of our tongues without disturbing us. Yet each of these Beatitudes is revolutionary and an aphorism, and together they can, when properly understood, utterly overthrow secularism and radically transform insipid Christianity. That's right. Each one of them is a carefully crafted diamond of a gem that was an earth-shattering statement in and of itself. And he gives us eight of them, and it is what Christianity is all about, but we get so used to them and we blow over them and act like they don't mean anything anymore, and they don't shatter our world quite like it did when Christ first uttered them.
Yeah.
I thought that was excellent.
That is good. Okay, let's take a break. You have to take a break. You have to get up.